But now, more importantly, David, we've got a few questions for you. I've got one or two from the tables that have been written out, and then I think we've got quite a few texts and tweets which we will come to. Here's the first one just to kick off with, though. Somebody's asked this one, David. So, would you say the existence of God is a theory?
Well, I'm glad we're starting with the easy one to start off with. Wow, that's good. That's a really interesting one. Lots of people use theory in lots of different ways. So people say it's just a theory, as if somehow that's not very good or whatever. But a theory is a way, a model to interpret the evidence. Now, in that sense, I'm quite happy with saying that God is the best explanation to interpret the evidence that we have. The evidence of Jesus, the evidence of religious experience, the evidence of the universe. And in fact, God is the most elegant and satisfying way to explain the evidence, to unite the evidence. However, the trouble with theory is that it's impersonal. Right. It could be a mathematical formula. And science is driven by the impersonal. It looks for those mathematical understandings, those laws of physics. And ultimately for me, God is much more than a theory in that he's personal. And that means not that I envisage him as a man with a great white beard up there, but that God has the capacity to love, the capacity to act, the capacity to feel compassion, and a whole number of other things that a mathematical theory doesn't have. And that's why I think God's the best explanation, but I'd rather not talk about a theory because of its impersonal nature.
It's more than a theory.
More than a theory.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's really. Would you like to? I should have said that right at the beginning.
Right, how about it? Now, here's something which is new to me, so you might be able to help those of us who... As a Christian, what would you say about the parallel universe theory? You might have to explain what that is.
Yeah, sure. It's a really important question at the moment for science. Do you remember when I talked about the Goldilocks enigma, that things are just right? Well, one of the interpretations of things being just right is to say that's because God set up the universe in that way. But a number of people, partly for reasons that they don't want to use the God explanation, but partly for some other scientific reasons, have said, maybe things in our universe are just right, and we are here so we observe them to be just right, but there may be other universes where the laws of physics are different and not just right, but there wouldn't be any observers, any human beings, any intelligent life in those universes, right? Now, at the moment, we've got a whole number of many universe theories. One, some of you might remember, which was that the universe might expand, and then gravity contracts it, and then people thought it might bounce and do this oscillation. And you would have a universe after a universe after a universe. We now know that that's not the case for various reasons I can go into, but not just at the moment. Everyone says hallelujah. Another many universe theory is to say that our universe is like a bubble. When you put washing up liquid into a washing up bowl. My wife says, don't you dare use that illustration because you never do it. But anyway, when you do it, you get lots of different size bubbles. Yeah. And it's maybe, some have said, that maybe our universe is one bubble amongst many bubbles. Yeah. And so there are other theories. The difficulty is, how do we actually know that other universes are there? And at the moment, we don't know how to pass information from one universe to another. So how do you actually know that they're there? Which means that it's a philosophical suggestion rather than a scientific suggestion.
Right.
Okay? The importance is, do you know when I said the Goldilocks enigma, these anthropic balances, are not a proof for God? And I tried to be really careful about that. The reason for that is that you can interpret them either because of many universes or God.
Yeah.
You don't have to interpret them one or the other just by that way. So you can't prove God in that way.
Right. Okay.
That makes
great.
Sense.
That's thank you. That's very helpful. David, there's an interesting one here. Somebody, I think this has been typed out, so somebody came prepared for this.
Wow.
All humans are born with a spirituality which is searching for answers, the reason for being. Religion tries to give us answers, but it is so variable, isn't it?
In terms of the type of answers of different religions.
I think that's what's behind it.
Gosh, it is. And I've worked in different parts of the world. I've been privileged to do that. I worked collaboratively in physics for a number of years with a dear Hindu friend of mine, who incidentally was very keen on this oscillating universe because of reincarnation. That was his interest. And I don't have an easy answer, Rick, to this question of the multitude of religions. I think all I can speak about is my experience so far. One of the things about Hinduism, which I learned living in India for a little while, is that Hinduism in itself takes a lifetime to fully understand and its complexities. And I'm not going to be silly enough to say, well, I've looked at Islam, I've looked at Hinduism, I've looked at Buddhism, and I understand. Yeah. All I can say is I've lived and I've understood Christian faith, and I find that really satisfying, enriching. Now, I want to be open to people of different faiths. God, right to the Hebrews, God has revealed himself in many and various ways, but supremely in his son, Jesus. And so I do believe that Jesus is the supreme revelation of God, but that there are insights from other faiths, which I want to be open to and learn from.
Great. That's helpful. Thank you, David. Thank you. Now, I think it might be time then to come to one or two of our tweets and texts. So hopefully, with the marvels of science, here we go. What do you think God's reason for dark matter and dark energy taking up most of the universe is? Now, again, you may need to help those of us who dark matter and dark energy is new. So most of the universe is made up of these things. And what's the reason?
Wow. This is a great question because it's really embarrassing for physicists because it reminds us that we know very little of what the universe is made of. Dark matter is a type of matter that we know is in the universe, but we can't see it. We know that it's there because it exerts gravitational effects on the things around it, but it doesn't give out any light, so we can't see it. And we think round about 20 to 25% of the universe is in the form of dark matter. We then know that another 70% or so of the universe is in the form of dark energy. And we call it that because we've no idea what it actually is. We know that it's there accelerating the expansion rate of the universe. Now, you don't have to be a great mathematician to work out that that simply says that I sit here before you knowing really only what 5% of the universe is made of. And you may be sitting there thinking, why have I come along on a Friday night to listen to someone who only knows what 5% of the universe is made of? Well, the trouble is that actually we know that we only know what 5% is made of. Now, why did God create a universe like this? I think part of it is that the universe is there to surprise us, intrigue us, allow us to use our God-given gifts to explore the universe. Donald Mackay was professor of neuroscience at Keele University, a dear godly Christian man. And he used to talk about how Christianity was different from pagan religions. He said, in pagan religions, you shouldn't get involved with the realm of the gods. You shouldn't wander into these deep realms. But he said that for him as a Christian, science was rather like a child in his parents' garden, being told to go and explore. Not being told everything about everything, but go and find out a bit for yourself. Now be careful, there's weeds over there and there's nettles over there and there's a fence there and don't go... But nevertheless, just go and find out, discover, come back and talk about it. And I think that's a lovely image of science, actually. That we do not fear the unanswered questions. We're invited into using our minds and to enjoy science. You know, I hope I've conveyed something of my enjoyment about science tonight. And I think that's because there's these intriguing questions which we still don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. Let's try another one. Here we go. Now this is something that I know you have a particular interest in. What happened to the dinosaurs?
Well, I used to work on this a little while ago, and we were interested in the dinosaurs because the currently accepted theory is that 65 million years or so ago, a comet impacted the Earth or exploded in the atmosphere, causing a great deal of dust and water to affect the temperature of the Earth, and that led to the dinosaur extinction. In fact, what's really interesting is that the dinosaurs were only one extinction. Every 30 million years or so, other species, mass extinctions happen. And people said, well, maybe the Earth is hit every 30 million years by these great comets. And this causes mass extinctions. By the way, we're middle in between the 30 million years at the moment. So we're all right for the Newcastle match tomorrow. Although by about 5 o'clock, I'd probably be wanting to be hit by a comet. And so people said, well, maybe every 30 million years a comet hits. And we did a bit of work which actually showed that you can't get comets to hit every 30 million years. And our preference was that you get lots of volcanoes going off every 30 million years. And this is what causes mass extinctions, which means the dinosaurs were doubly unfortunate. They were probably hit both by a comet and lots of volcanoes going off at the same time. And so they really paid a big price. Now, of course, I mean, there's something underneath that, which is where a number of Christians say things like, well, why are the dinosaurs not mentioned in Scripture? Or 65 million years ago, that's a long time. Or why did God create species which are no longer around? And so why do you think God created dinosaurs that are no longer around? And to be honest, I don't have a full answer to that. I think part of it is that maybe this was the only way that intelligent, self-conscious life would arise. But one of the things that troubles me about evolution, and I've always been honest about this, is the level of waste within the process, the number of species that are wiped out. And I don't have an easy answer to that. Is it enough for me to say, well, actually, I don't think evolution is right? Well, that has to be balanced with other evidence for and other theological arguments. But I don't have an easy answer, Rick.
Thank you, David. Thank you. Let's try something else. What is your opinion of those people who are visited by extraterrestrials and interdimensional beings? Surely they are equally blessings from God.
Wow. Well, this is... Oh, gosh. I want to say one or two things about this, if I may, because it's, again, a really interesting question. The first thing is that I think some of this area is overhyped. So I read a survey the other day which claimed that 4 million Americans claimed that they'd been abducted by aliens. That's more Americans than can do long division, by the way. And with respect to any of our American friends who might be here this evening, my question is, why would aliens want 4 million Americans? I mean, one or two might be enough. So I think there's a, you know, you ask those kind of questions and you begin to sift out. However, there are folk who will testify to some kind of visitation. Some Christians have said, well, maybe this is encounters with angels or demons that people now use the science fiction mythology and stories to interpret.
Yeah.
I think there's something in that, actually. Yeah. We have a biblical story which talks about God communicating in some bizarre ways at times. And I'm quite happy to say that some of the interpretations of aliens are perhaps that. Yeah. What I'm less happy to say is that these experiences are evidence of intelligent life elsewhere in the universe. I think sometimes they can be simply dreams.
Yeah.
I think sometimes they can be simply aberrations in the brain.
Yeah.
The reason that I think, I don't think that they're intelligent beings from other dimensions is simply because there are a whole stack of arguments against that, both scientifically and indeed, I think, theologically.
Right. Right.
And there are many bizarre experiences that we have in this world.
Yeah.
We've got to be careful to interpret them.
Yeah.
And the Bible's quite clear about this. It talks about discernment and wisdom.
Yeah.
In unusual experiences.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Can I just take that a little bit further?
Yeah.
I guess behind that, for some people, might be the question, what impact would it have on your Christian faith if there were to be found, in time, beings on other planets?
It would have a positive effect on my Christian faith in the sense that it would show me more of the extravagance of God in creation.
Yeah. However,
it would raise some interesting questions.
Yeah.
And particularly the interesting question, which is, what is the relationship of the Jesus event to intelligent life elsewhere in the universe?
Yeah.
And Christians there, or the few Christians who've thought about it, have gone in two different ways. Some have said, if there is intelligent life elsewhere in the universe, we think that what happened on Calvary, the death of God on the cross, is once for all for the whole universe. It happens once in Palestine, that's it.
And there's bits of the New Testament that talk a bit like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. The trouble with that, or the difficulty, is that then you have to conclude that Christians have to become cosmic missionaries.
Yes.
And take the gospel to other parts of the universe. That is a very long journey, it has to be said.
Yes.
So other Christians have said, but maybe that the God that we see in Jesus would become little green flesh on another planet.
Right. Yeah.
The difficulty with that, and I'm sorry this gets a little technical, but it's really, I think, important to grasp. When Christians talk about God becoming human flesh, they understand that he does that for two reasons. The first I talked about, to show us what God is like, but the second is to save us from the state that we've got ourselves in, to save us from sin. Now, if any of you have read C.S. Lewis and his science fiction stuff, you'll know that Lewis plays with this because he talks about a world where beings may not have fallen, not got themselves in a state, and so do they need God to become in a little green flesh? So, I should have started the answer to that question by saying I don't know, but I've prattled on a little bit. John Polkinghorne, when he was asked this question, said, I'm not entirely sure, but the God that I see in Jesus would do what is necessary.
Yeah.
And I think that's a pretty good answer, actually.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you. Let's try something else. Ben. Great talk at Chapel Town Academy this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Obviously, somebody was there. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I would like to know more about your PhD in theology. Sounds very interesting. Thank you. A little bit more.
Did I send that in?
Somebody owes you anyway.
That's right, absolutely, absolutely. There's a little book which describes it, which rejoices in the title Christian Eschatology and the Physical Universe. And you'll find it in bargain basements in bookshops here and there.
And the author is?
The author is me, I'm afraid. But it is getting close to Christmas, and I'm sure an aunt or uncle needs a... Anyway, let me be serious for a moment. We've talked about the beginning of the universe. One of the fascinating things about the end of the universe is that it is destined to futility in physical terms. The universe is going to expand, and as it expands, it cools. It gets to such a low temperature that life itself isn't able to exist anymore. The universe is cold, lifeless, full of black holes. In fact, this is a problem for a lot of scientists, that they think this is such a beautiful universe, basically it's going to end in futility. And that's where John Wesley, interestingly enough, I knew I had to be a Methodist, get a Methodist reference to John Wesley in, is really interesting, because John Wesley said that the central category of hope in the New Testament is new creation. A new heaven and a new earth. And Wesley began to play with this. In fact, he preached a very famous sermon in 1781 called The Great Deliverance. And what's really interesting about that sermon is he talks about whether dogs or cats will get to heaven.
Right.
And partly what he was trying to do is to say, are God's purposes beyond just human beings? And actually, I think that God's purposes are for the whole of creation. So I don't believe, I'm afraid, that simply we are separated from this creation and we kind of little grey souls float up and live on clouds and play harps forevermore. I actually think that God is the God of resurrection, that our future is in a resurrection.